Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhart. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 217. Where do you get your inspiration? So welcome, everyone, here, and I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. I want to begin by thanking the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put on Huzzah! Huzzah is an amazing historical wargaming convention up in Portland, Maine. It'll be held May 17th to the 19th of 2019 at the Doubletree, just basically across the street from the Maine Mall in beautiful South Portland, Maine. And I also want to take a moment to thank the very amazing and kind people who put on Enfilade. Enfilade is another great historical wargaming convention. It is the largest one west of the Mississippi. It'll be running from May 24th through the 26th, 2019 at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Be sure to check out both Huzzah if you're on the East Coast and Enfilade if you're on the West Coast or if you like to travel. Both are really cool conventions. I can't say enough for the support and how much I really love and appreciate people who are involved with those conventions. I, of course, go on behalf of Wargaming Recon, and my buddy Adrian and co-host, of course, as well, usually comes with me to Huzzah. We have not yet been to Enfilade, but that is on my list. So huge shout out to Alyssa Faden and all of the incredible wargamers over there who will put on and run and participate in Enfilade, and of course the incredible and amazing group of people who make Huzzah happen, who are members of the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. So today, my friends, we are going to be talking about where you get your inspiration from when you want a wargame. And there are many different types of games out there, right? Many different types of tabletop games, video games, whether you're doing a project, whether you are going to be a GM, whether you're running and organizing a convention, right? You might have a theme in mind, or maybe there's something you've wanted to do, but where does that spark come from? What puts the idea in your head that makes you think, it would be a really cool idea to do whatever it is? And then how do you take that idea? How do you translate it to the tabletop? And how do you bring it to life for gamers like you and me to play? But before we begin with all of that, because I know you're interested in it, let's do a little bit of a hobby update, okay? So I am doing this episode solo. My friend and co-host Adrian was not able to join me this time, but that's okay, because I actually have been sick with a really bad cold. This bad upper respiratory virus has just been knocking me out. As you might know, I am an asthmatic. So if you've ever listened to old episodes of the podcast and you hear like really heavy breathing, it's because I'm an asthmatic and I'm like, I need to breathe. I can't breathe. So that's what that is. And as a result of that, I can tend to get these viruses and just knocks me out. So I was supposed to play in another session of Dungeon World run by Adrian's daughter with Adrian and with our buddy and friend, Mr. Alex Kostopoulos. And unfortunately, I was not able to participate in that. And they played a new role-playing game, or new to us anyway, that Alex ran. He said it only has like 3 pages of rules. And I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. And of course, it's escaping me at the moment, but I know Alex was all excited about it because he just kind of gets into these sort of things and just seems to really like them. Actually, I think it's called Risus, the Anything role-playing game with 4 pages of rules. So it's a different way to do stuff. And basically anything goes in it. So I didn't get to play in it, but I know it was a lot of fun. What I wanted to do, but because I was sick and I wasn't really able to, I wanted to work some more on my Things from the Basement 28mm dry freight shipping container. It's supposed to be a 40-foot long container. And if you watch video of the recording, or if you've been on the Facebook group for the podcast fan club, you'll have seen some of the pictures for what I've done. It's an MDF container, and I painted it. I ran into some trouble with it. So first of all, it's not done. I'm still working on it, but I did run into some trouble. So when I spray painted it, I primed black, and apparently it was a little patchier than I thought it was. So I used actually some Games Workshop Chaos Black, or whatever they call it, but black spray primer. And then for touch-ups, because the weather had been terrible, I was like, I'm going to use some of their Imperial primer from their technical line. So I did it, but on the piece itself, you can actually, and I don't know if I shared photos, but it will be in the video of this podcast. So if you watch the video, which is the unedited kind of stuff, you'll see that there are areas of it that, I mean, you're not going to see because they're on the bottom, but that are glossier than others. And that's where I use the Imperial primer. And it doesn't blend well. So I was a little disappointed about that. Okay, no one's going to see it. So that's what it is. I use blue all over it. I also ran into some other problems as well. And part of the problem was when I was removing a tiny, tiny piece. So again, if you watch the video, and you don't have to, but if you watch the video, you'll see what I mean. But it's basically, it's a door frame that goes on the front of the shipping container. Your best bet is just to go to the Facebook group and check it out. So the shipping container has, of course, has multiple pieces. And you have these doors that go into the front. And they're not meant to be glued in place because you're supposed to be able to open and close them, which is a nice feature. But to keep them in place, because there's only holes in the bottom that they slide into, the top is loose. So you have a door frame that gets put there and basically keeps them in place, and it helps it to look really cool, and the effect will be great when I'm done. But the actual doorframe piece itself is so thin and fragile, unexpectedly fragile, in fact, that I was like, well, how am I going to get this out because it's so thin? So I'm using, for lack of a better word, sprue. We still haven't come up with a better word for what do you call the wood, the MDF framing for when you take the pieces out. But to try to get at the sprue, I was like, okay, so I guess I'm going to pop it up. But there was no real area around it for me to get any tools in or implements. So I'm using my fingers, my thick fingers, short, stubby fingers, to try to do it. And I hear crack, and I'm like, oh no, what? Well, that's not what I said. What I said is not appropriate for a family-friendly podcast. And I noticed that at the top of the lintel, I guess it would be, I caused a crack. And it was starting to split. Luckily, I realized it quickly enough so that I didn't go completely through the top of the frame. And so then I went to the sprue, again, for lack of a better word. I'm like, well, if anything's going to break, I'm going to break the sprue because that's what I don't need to keep. So I start cracking the sprue away. And then I get the thing out. And there were several areas where it has started to crack. So I'm pulling out my Loctite super glue. We'll come back to that in a moment. And I started applying glue and I tried to straighten it and it wasn't keeping straight. So what I had to do was, I have these expensive camera lenses that I use for my smartphone. I have an iPhone 6S and I use that if I'm going to do video for you guys or if I'm taking pictures of stuff. And so I hook them on and there we go. But they're heavy, right? So they're nice and heavy. So I use them to distribute the weight to kind of get the frame to be flat enough so that it could dry in order and be safe to go. So I did not have many kind words to say at that point about that. But I will say, I am quite impressed with the way the doors came, even though that I had some problems there. So again, with the MDF, it's really nicely lasered out on this kit. So you can see like where the door hinges would be and everything. And because MDF is flat, you don't get a lot of texture. So it's actually two pieces for the doors. You have a front facing kind of thing that you glue onto the back. And I had painted all like the bracing and the hinges and that kind of stuff a metallic color. I think it was gunmetal or bulk gunmetal, whatever they call it. It's a gunmetal color. And so I had done that And it was quite neat, I thought, how it came out. But what I didn't realize, while I was trying to get in there and do it and try to move it around, some of the laser work actually for the top of the piece, there's like these little cubes. And for some of them, I actually just accidentally, I broke some of them off because they're so fragile. And being a bit of a klutz, I'm completely attributing it to me. They broke off, and I was like, oh no, battle damage. And then the battle damage got worse as it went. So I had to paint it the best I could to deal with that and let it set. So I did have some difficulties with the kit, and then I was sick, which was okay because I had ordered some things. I realized I wanted to use a dry brush, and I happen to have here at home an unopened pot of Citadel dry brush. What do they call it? Ethereum Blue. And I opened it for the first time. And you can hear me opening the thing now. And I looked, and it was all dried out. At first, I couldn't tell. I was like, it almost looks wet. And I'm dabbing in, because it's a latex paint. It's basically a thing of plastic. So that was useless. But by the time I had realized it was after I had ordered other paints that I wanted to get to do some weathering on the kit. So I picked up, I actually watched a lot of YouTube videos, some of them Games Workshop ones. So I had ordered, they have some new paints out. I ordered a thing of Citadel Dry Ryza Rust, and you're supposed to get a really cool effect with this, usually when used with another paint. We'll come back to it in a minute. I also ordered, they have some new texture paints, which are kind of like dry brush, but they're meant for your bases, but I'm going to use it for weathering. So they have one called Sterland Battlemire, and this is a really thick, pasty kind of paint. It's supposed to be like a lot of dirt and muck kind of stuff. And then they have a muddy one called Sterland Mud, and they have these in different colors. But I picked these because I think they would look the best. And I had ordered another one. It's called like Typhus Corrosion. And usually what you do, you would use that actually to kind of show where there's like wear and tear on metal. And I thought, okay, great. The crate is metal. The shipping freight container is metal. So I'll use that. And you can either put it where like rivets would be or joints. Or then you can also kind of paint things down. And so you usually, from the videos I've seen on YouTube, you would use that. And then you would use the Ryza Rust. So that the Ryza Rust kind of causes this nice contrast. I ordered these from the war store, and I had an email saying, okay, we're shipping your stuff. And in the list, it said everything was in stock. And then when the package came, my Typhus Corrosion was not there. So I had to email them, and I'm working all this out and waiting for that to come. But of course, I placed the order after I realized my Ethereum Blue was dry. So that was quite annoying. But I also picked up a jar of Vallejo Thick Mud. And I waffled on this because this one is... what is it? It's black thick mud, which is what Adrian uses. He highly likes it. But I waffled on it because I thought it was too liquidy for what I want to do. Because I want like a really nice, thick, almost like dirt kind of consistency so that I can kind of show on like the inside of the crate to really get some nice weathering on it. Maybe along the baseline around it on either of the sides and that kind of stuff. And that just, I don't know if it'll work, but we'll give it a try. And then I also picked up that we're going to try out is a can of the Army Painter Black Spray Paint Primer so that I can give that a try because I'm running out of black spray primer and I've always used GW or other model company ones, but we're going to give this a try and see how I like that. None of this has happened yet, again, because looping back, because I was sick, but it's all on my table for me to work on and get through, and I'm really trying to continue to power through all of this. So let's switch gears and go back to inspiration. Now, recently, I've been reading a book called The Battle of Arnhem. You can look it up on Amazon. We'll have a link in our social media. It'll be an affiliate link, which means if you click it and you buy it or buy other things on Amazon, it won't cost you any extra, but Amazon will send a little bit of money our way as a way of saying thank you for the business and helps us to pay for the show and keep things going. But it's talking about Operation Market Garden, and I've loved, for many, many years, I've loved the movie A Bridge Too Far. Perhaps you've seen it too. It's fantastically well done, and it tells the tale of the Allies trying to do a military operation during World War II by doing market an air component and garden a ground component through and into the Netherlands to capture these bridges that would potentially allow the Allies to kind of get this easier access into Germany through the Ruhr, the industrial part of Germany, the Ruhr, where all the factories and stuff were, to hopefully get to Berlin quicker, I think ideally by Christmas of that year after the Normandy landings. And there's a lot of controversy about it because at the time there was competition between the British high commanders and between some of the American commanders, and General Eisenhower, who was supreme commander of the Allied forces, had to try to balance all of this. And he had some accidents. I hurt his leg, I believe. So he wasn't actually able to be as close to the front where he should have, or been in as many of the meetings as he should have. And Field Marshal Montgomery of the British had his way, and they initiated this operation, which was not a success. I don't think I'm spoiling the movie or anything for you, but they capture some bridges. They have a lot of fierce fighting going on and just like a lot of bumbles happening. And while reading the book, and I'm still working my way through the book, reading the book and rewatching the movie yet again, I realized that I am inspired, hence the episode here right now that you're listening to, I am inspired to do more World War II gaming, Western Front in particular, and to try to do something with this operation. This involves a lot of airborne components, the 101st, the 82nd, the 1st British, and there was a Polish contingent as well that was involved with this operation, and then 30 Corps, I believe, of armored tanks to roll through on a primary road to kind of get through and do everything. But then I want to kind of do this maybe in bolt action, or maybe Flames of War, or a smaller scale of that sort. And then it got me thinking about all the other things that kind of pop into my head. If I'm reading books or graphic novels, or if I'm watching, I'm rewatching the HBO series Rome, and that kind of lines up with the game of DBA that I played at the Hobby Bunker Game Day not too long ago. And so it got me thinking, like, what kind of sources can inspire us? Of course, you have things like your friends, right, and your other gamers, people who might have a passion already and are trying to recruit you for it. They might say, hey, you know, I really love playing Warhammer 40K, and they try to get you and talk about an army that might suit your needs, or a particular feel or an aesthetic, or maybe there's a big game coming up. There might be a tournament of some sort for some system, and that might be something that grabs you. But I think more often than not, it's probably going to be film or television, maybe a book as well. So if you're kind of digging into this sort of stuff, a lot of people like to read military histories. You might be reading military history, and maybe it's something about which you are already passionate. But then again, maybe it might kind of spur you on to say, you know, I really never thought so much about the Saratoga campaign in the American Revolution. I've always been drawn to Yorktown and want to emulate that. But maybe you want to head up into New York and spend more time there, deal with Freeman's Farm and the stuff going on there. So you might find yourself drawn to a particular military unit or to a specific campaign and try to find ways to emulate that. Or maybe a certain style of gaming, right? So, for example, let's say you've always kind of done larger scale battles, something that you feel like Black Powder is a great rule set for. And you've done these epic scales, a lot of big Napoleonics perhaps. But then you realize you're spending a lot of time watching Sword and Sandals films, right? And you just really want to do some great gladiator games. And next thing you know, instead of those big scale games, you're doing skirmish gaming. You're doing arena games. Maybe you're playing some Gangs of Rome. Or now coming out, Mortal Gods, also by Footsore War/Warbanner UK, which is based off their Test of Honor rule system and is set in ancient Greece. And they actually just signed a deal, which they've made public, with Victrix to kind of help put out miniatures and all that kind of stuff. That's coming out early 2019, I believe, actually. And I've seen some of the pictures of things and talked with Andy Hobday a little bit about it, and just it sounds really cool. Some big stuff happening over there, and some great releases for Gangs of Rome as well. Maybe you're doing this kind of smaller stuff. You're doing skirmish level games. Maybe you're changing scale, right? So maybe you want to stay with those grand Napoleonics, and you've done them in 28mm. You've been very lucky to have the space and the resources to have this large collection, 28mm. But then maybe you realize, you know what? You want to do World War II, because maybe you are really interested in Operation Market Garden, but you want to do it in 15mm, because it's easier, takes up less space, because your space is already filled, right, with your 28mm Napoleonics. Maybe you need to save space, maybe it's a side project, something not as important as your primary passion, but something you still want to pursue. And so you don't want to devote as much money and time and energy to it. So you're going to do 15 mil because the smaller scale means you can pick up the pieces a little more affordably. They won't take up as much space. Maybe they're a little easier for you to paint. Or maybe going the smaller scale is something that you're kind of intrigued by something you read in a magazine article. There's some really great wargaming magazines out there, and they might have coverage, or they might show a model or miniature coming out, or talk about a company that's doing this new scale that just kind of really gets you going. And you're like, that's what I want to try. I'll tell you what usually does it for me, and this might sound a little weird, okay? So normally, what I end up getting really inspired by, that kind of really just gets me going, is when I stumble across something that I'm going to cover for the show. So for example, I happen to come across a company that does tabletop gaming mats, and they do 2D/2D/3D terrain, and they call Playmats. They're at playmats.eu. They're a Polish company, actually. And so they're sending a package worth of material for us to review. And knowing that that's coming, and not knowing what's in it, though, really gets me excited, because I know when I open it, I'm going to think, oh, look at all these possibilities of things that can play, and how can I use it with the other stuff I have, and how can I expand it? So, of course, my primary reason and motivation for all of it is to make sure that I present it and review it in an appropriate manner here on the show, that I do credit for all of you, that I do it fairly and unbiased, and that it's something I can show to the company and say, hey, here, we reviewed your stuff, we did our best to be objective, and this is our thoughts, and here's what people have to say about it, and so forth. But then I like to continue to use it. So I like to take this stuff and then I like to try to do something with it. So for example, when got that crescent root building, that made me think, wow, I can do a lot with this with bolt action. So I started doing more bolt action and have an army and have done more that way as well. So seeing all these little things as they come together kind of light a passion. The Scarbox battle mat, the things from the basement stuff, right? I've been painting again because of reviewing things from the basement. Had a chat with Adrian, and we realized there was a lot of stuff that we had to cover and review. We got a pile going, and we didn't want to get too far behind. And one thing I thought, I can actually paint. I have the space. And to review the things from the basement stuff, I need to paint. It's been sitting here. I need to do it, get it done. So I'll start working on it. And I started churning stuff out, and I hit this obstacle right now, but I'll come back to it, and we'll get it taken care of, and we'll keep on moving our way through so that I'm doing this because of creating content for all of you, right? But at the same time, it's enlightening an interest in me. So this shipping container, right? This freight container, this brings me back to World War II. So I know that technically it's not a World War II kind of thing, right? But it makes me think of industrial kind of stuff. And from the industrial kind of stuff, I think of things like urban landscapes of Stalingrad, for example. Maybe playing the Stalingrad table. This piece in particular actually makes me think of things like Force on Force. That could be a lot of fun. Do some modern skirmishing and get things out there like that. Maybe some sci-fi gaming, which would be kind of cool. And then that actually kind of ties in with things like TV shows like Designated Survivor or, you can go back to movies and books with Starship Troopers. And that has like a really cool industrial kind of feel about it. Or like a Judge Dredd, which then brings you to role-playing games, things like Cyberpunk and all that sort of stuff. So it becomes a rabbit hole in a way, but a good rabbit hole. So for me, it just kind of leads me along. And I find more and more of my gaming and my gaming and hobby activities revolve around this core of the podcast. Now, we're all different. Like I said, maybe you are really into a TV series, and that TV series is a motivating factor for you to do the gaming that you do. Maybe there's a big project. That could be another reason that you might have that kind of fire ignited in you, right? And you just kind of wells up and it goes, yes! And you set a project. There are just so many different ways that you could be so impassioned. And I'd love to know specific projects that you've done, specific gaming that you've done that has been influenced by something else, a book you read, family history you might have. Maybe you have a relative who took part in a certain operation, or an affinity you have for something based on your location, maybe, or a thing you've seen, movie you saw, music you've listened to. Music could be quite influencing as well, right? I'd love to hear what some of your experiences are with this. I talked about some of mine now, but I know we each have our own that kind of light some of these passions in us. And there are many of you who have very strong passions about things. For example, I know that Mike Payne, who's been on the show in the past, right? He is well known for his Henghai series of games, and they have a very pulp feel to them. But I bet you might be interested to know what kind of brings that on. What about that kind of got him to go, you know, I really should do this, and I'm going to stick with it and put all this time and energy into it. Maybe Michael let us know, and I can share it with all of you. But I'd love to hear from you. If you want to get in touch, please reach me, Jonathan@WarGamingRecon.com, or we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You can get in touch any of those ways and see how it's going. I want to touch on just a couple other things as we are winding to a close here. I want to just mention that, oddly enough, I haven't gotten a ton of feedback about our wet palette episode, but the stuff I've been hearing kind of shows a split for people with the Everlasting wet palette. Now, the one we reviewed is the Studio XL. It is their largest wet palette by Redgrass Games, and it's blue, in case you're not sure which is which. They sell what they call the Painter, which is a smaller one, and it's orange. From what I've seen on social media and in the Kickstarter campaign, it appears that there's a pretty sharp divide, right, between people who like it and people who don't. And now the people who like it seem to have that smaller orange one, the Painter. And the people who don't like it, or who have issues, who've noticed problems with the build, problems with the construction, problems with the execution, problems. People who've noticed problems or have concerns tend to have the more expensive, larger, blue Studio XL. And I find it confusing to me, one, that you'd have this clear disparity. This really does seem to be a trend here. But also that of the one that has the problems, the issues, the concerns, or at least the customers seem to feel this way about it, it's the more expensive one. And I'm not saying more expensive needs to mean better quality, superior product, or anything like that. But you would think that if you're spending more money, the proof is in the pudding, right? That there should be some sort of corresponding level where it should be at least as good as the less expensive product, that they should be equitable, really. But if there's not going to be any sort of equality, that the more expensive one should have something about it that helps stand apart. Of course, it's a color, right? And it's a size, so it's a larger size. But you would think that other things should scale up. There should be other features about it. It should have something extra that pops. And other than the color, which is a beautiful color, blue, it's a great shade of blue, and it is a larger size, there's still just construction issues there that seem to be a trend for some customers, at least. And they don't seem to be there for the smaller one. And I don't know why it is. In hindsight, I wish I went for the smaller one. That's what I was going to do originally. No, do you know what? We'll get the bigger one and we'll do that. And it'll be nice because I thought it'd be maybe a little bit better of a product. And I also thought it'd be a chance to show people what like a really larger size wet palette would be like. Because you don't see them like that often. And maybe there's a reason why. I don't know. But I found that interesting. We've also had a bit of feedback where people seem to like this more free-form style of podcast, where it's not as regimented as they have been in the past with all these lists and orders and very strict kind of stuff going on. I used to think that those are actually pretty free-form as well, that would do a lot of work behind the scenes to kind of get stuff set up so that we could then just kind of talk, be like, here's a topic, and we just talk. And now we really do just say, okay, this is what we're going to talk about, and go at it. And we don't really plan out things, so that's why we're not really sharing links so much anymore, or web addresses and things like that, because it would involve looking them up while we record, and just we don't want to do that. So it's making it easier on us here, but also I think it's creating a more natural podcast for you. It feels more genuine and authentic. It just kind of flows a little bit better, and people seem to, at least from who I've heard from, seem to feel that the interaction between Adrian and I is better than ever, that they really like having him on the show, that it feels as if you are here with us, hanging out around the game table, hanging out at the pub, hanging out at a painting session, doing your hobby in. And that's really what we want. We want it to be a nice, warm, comfortable, welcoming, friendly environment here, where maybe the conversation and the discussion gets a little spirited at times, but it's all in good fun. So I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of the podcast. We will be back next time with another episode of the show. And I want to take this moment to once again thank our sponsors. I want to thank the incredible people at the Maine Historical Wargamers Association who put on Huzzah! May 17th through the 19th, 2019 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. And I also want to thank the very kind people who put on Enfilade, which is the largest historical miniatures tabletop gaming convention west of the Mississippi. You can find it May 24th through the 26th, 2019 at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Huge, huge shout out and thank you to all of them who put them on, and also to all of you Patreon backers for your support and help in making the show exist. Without all of you, we could not be here doing it. I cannot emphasize that enough. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being part of the community. And I want to take a moment just to thank Joshua Shoebridge, who came back as of last episode to edit the audio. He had quite a bit of difficulty. He's still having some medical issues going on, but he's mostly well. And then, of course, his internet went out for a long time. He wasn't even sure if he was going to be able to take the edited episode and get it back to me. And he was trying to figure out how to do it because he didn't have any internet. And I mean, like, the large file sizes. And thankfully, he managed to find a way to get on some Wi-Fi and then send me the file, and it came through. And so then we were able to get it out later than we normally like, but we got it out and it was a good thing. And I just can't thank Joshua enough for all his hard work and his diligence and his friendship. He's an amazing guy. If you ever need any help audio editing, be sure to reach out to him. He's also going to be doing a new podcast, which I alluded to before. And he should have, by the time you listen to this, should have edited this episode as well. If you are one of the like two people who liked checking out our show notes, you'll see that they're different. And we've done a lot of other changes to the website. They might not be as apparent, but we kind of removed stuff and pared things down to just try to simplify it, and realized there was a lot of stuff on there that wasn't really necessary read anymore, things that weren't really important or pertinent for listeners and you, maybe things that were more appropriate for the back end and things of that sort. And I do just want to say that the show does really well. We get some great engagement from all of you. I love the feedback. I love the conversations. And we get pretty good numbers for downloads. We tend to average about 1,200 downloads per episode, which I'm told puts us in like the top 20, top 30% of podcasts worldwide. But recently, our numbers have been even higher. There was an episode a couple episodes ago, I think it was like Tabletop Update, episode 214 with Adrian, that had, I think, about 3,000 downloads or just under that, something like that. And that was quite impressive as well. So it's really neat. And as we continue on into the new seasons of fall and winter, we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. I do want to remind everyone, though, that as we do get into the winter, I will be taking my usual month off, the 2 weeks, last 2 weeks of December and first 2 weeks of January. But I probably will be extending that because the birth of my second child will be happening beginning of the year. It's supposed to be January 1st. We'll see if that actually is when the baby comes. But we continue to do renovations here for the Wargaming Recon studio to get stuff going on and make the changes so we can do more video and podcasting down in the space and all that. And we're making great strides here as well. And be sure to check out our Facebook page, of course, because that's where we share what's going on, but also our fan club Facebook group. And that's where you'll be able to see how I'm making out with the painting projects. I share pictures on there and we get feedback and talking about stuff. There was actually a whole conversation about naked models and how to paint them and things of that sort, partially because of the new Mortal Gods. There's at least one, probably more models who will be in the nude, and not something I've dealt with in the past. I usually try to steer clear from that, but I think not only do I know that I want to get into Mortal Gods, but I think when I do, I want to tackle painting naked models, I think. And it feels weird saying that. It feels really weird saying that. But just to kind of do it, because there are some differences that you have to paint compared to clothed models, and not necessarily a whole lot of area to do, and just trying to learn some new techniques and styles and things of that sort. But I think a trick for me, which I've learned from posting it on social media and talking with people, is instead of priming them with the new black that I got from Army Painter, pick up a flesh colored spray primer and spray them with that, and then do a wash or like a quick shade of things, and then dry brush. So we'll see how that goes. Well, thank you all again for listening to this episode of the show. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on social media. Email me, jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. We're on all the things, all the places. Check out our website, wargamingrecon.com. And we will be back next time with another episode of Wargaming Recon. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter where you get your inspiration from, you know that you have to, you gotta, you need to, that's right, keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.